Hello, Dave. Yeah, you. Welcome back. Welcome back to Ubuntu Podcast. This season 12, episode 30. And this week we're going to have a little bit of an OggCamp retrospective. We've got some command line love and all your wonderful feedback. Joining me this week are Mark.
Hello, hello.
How are you?
Yeah, I'm pretty good.
Excellent. And Alan.
Hello, hello.
How are you doing?
Tickety-boo.
I'm glad to hear it. Alan, what have you been up to recently?
I've been doing what all the cool kids are doing. I've been doing live streams.
On Twitch?
No, I've been using YouTube.
Are you doing it wrong?
Yeah, I know. Well, all the cool kids moved off Twitch and they're on Mixer. So, no, what I've been doing is I thought I would live stream testing out the ISOs of Ubuntu before the release. So this was a week or so ago, as you're listening to this. And all I did was hook up a laptop to OBS and capture the output so I could show what happens when, you know, you boot the ISO and how you go about testing. And then I showed how you use the ISO tracker to determine what tests need to be done and how you mark them as done and so on and so on. So it was really just a kind of educational thing and a community, you know, engagement thing to get people testing out the ISO images. It was good fun.
Excellent. And did you find any quality bugs?
I found some bugs. I don't know about their quality. I found a couple of interesting ones related to performance, which were known, which is good. And they're not quite sure how that's going to be fixed, but I believe it's being discussed. And a couple of weird quirks. Yeah, found a couple of bugs. And what was actually more useful is not necessarily finding the bugs, but validating that there weren't bugs or the thing works okay. So, you know, stuff like making sure you can install it properly and making sure that it boots up okay after the first install and it behaves as expected. It's actually pretty basic stuff. It's not hard, but it was really nice to do with other people watching and chatting along with them. So people were asking questions and chatting along in the sidebar on YouTube. And it just made it, the time flew by. And a couple of them were a good couple of hours of streaming, you know, just DDing images to USB drives, booting and installing. It's not hard. It's just takes a bit of time and a bit of effort.
Are you doing this on actual devices then?
Yeah, I had my ThinkPad X220, old trusty reliable Deep Thought. I plugged a HDMI capture card into the output of that.
Ah, cool.
And connected that to OBS on another laptop. So I had two machines on my desk, one doing the streaming and showing the browser and webcam and all that nonsense, and the other one to actually do the install so that I could use it like a normal person. And it was interesting because it did highlight there were some hardware issues that I wouldn't have found if I'd used a virtual machine.
Right, yeah.
You know, while VMs are great, it was good to do it on real hardware as well.
So the weekend just gone, Alan and I were at OggCamp.
Yes, Manchester.
Well, that was nice for both of you then.
It really was. Why weren't you there, Mark?
Well, having spent the previous weekend gallivanting about the country with all of our hospital bags and stuff in the back of the car, I decided that it probably wasn't a wise time of the year to disappear to halfway up the country away from my partner when she might go into labor at any moment. So I stayed at home.
Wise.
Yes.
Meanwhile,
you two are up there having a good old time, I hope. So let's start with the easy questions. What talks did you see?
Well, actually, we should start with how we got up there, because normally we go in the Martin Wimpress battle bus, which provides high quality Wi-Fi, snacks, drinks and power charging points. This time we went on a cross country train, which was rubbish. But it meant that Martin didn't have to drive. So that was okay.
Yeah, I quite enjoyed the train, to be honest with you. It also felt like it went really quickly for a, you know, almost 4-hour train journey. It felt quite brisk.
Yeah, I've got the train up to Manchester from here before, and it's not too bad.
The thing that I found, I find it stressful when I didn't have a seat booked, and there's this constant fear that someone's going to get on who has your seat booked, because it stops all the way. There's like a dozen times that it stops and you have to think, oh, am I going to get hoofed out of my chair and move somewhere else? And you see people having to move around, and nobody wants that. That's not going to happen in the car unless someone shouts shotgun before I get there.
Yeah, I have to say, I showed my naivety with booking long distance rail tickets, because usually I just get on commuter chain trains and I never think about booking a seat. And yeah, that was a little bit of anxiety there and back. And we got lucky. In fact, we did the first hop we did standing up, because there was no space and there were no seats.
So anyway, we got there, and yes, there were lots of talks. There was a party on the Friday night, and then the talks started on Saturday morning. There was a kind of introduction from Dan and Lorna on stage, talking about the sponsors, introducing how the event was going to work, and introducing the code of conduct, and a new thing they've introduced. They've got a contact phone number, so if there was anyone concerned that there was a code of conduct violation, they could just ring the hotline and it would go through to the organisers. So they implemented a good policy for that, but I'm not aware of any issues that occurred the whole weekend, so that's good. But yeah, then the talk started. Do you want to go first, Martin?
Well, yeah, I suppose we should explain there was four tracks running through the course of the weekend. There was the main track, which was entirely scheduled in advance. So that meant that people that were, you know, coming to Manchester from all corners of not just the country, but Europe, and in some cases America, knew that there was, in fact, something to be there for. And then there were three bar camps, so three tracks for unconference talks. So there were four simultaneous tracks running. But the first one I went to was from Elizabeth and Terence Eden, talking about their Open Benches project that they'd started. And this is something you've been dabbling in for a while, I think.
Yes, I am known when on holiday with the family to take photos of benches with inscriptions on and submitting them to openbenches.org. And I would strongly recommend anyone else does the same thing, because it's a super open data project. And Elizabeth and Terence are lovely people.
They really are.
And they've made a really well-designed, easy-to-use website for anyone who wants to contribute those benches that have inscriptions on. So it was a really, really nice, positive, wholesome talk to start the weekend with. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, very niche, very interesting, a nice bit of social preservation and some cool tech as well.
Yeah.
And the next talk, I think we both went to this one, was kind of a celebration of OggCamp in a way, because it was the progress of MQTT. Now, MQTT was actually created by Andy Stafford Clark about 20 years ago, but it was discussed in the pub at the very first OggCamp 10 years ago. And as a result of that, Mosquito was born, and Roger Light, who was at that first OggCamp, was on stage with Andy Stafford Clark looking at the 10 years of MQTT and Mosquito since that point.
I remember at the first OggCamp, Andy did his talk on his tweeting house and talking about MQTT and how it works for passing messages between all of his IoT devices and a central thing to send messages around about what's going on. And I can't remember if it was actually Roger or if it was someone else who asked the question.
It was me.
It was you.
Yeah.
You asked the question, is there an open source MQTT broker? And he said, no, but it would be nice if there was.
Yeah. And that's what triggered Roger to start developing Mosquito. And now, you know, 10 years later, Roger is now employed by an organization to work on Mosquito. That's his job, is working on it, which started at OggCamp. So as Martin said, it was a really nice like retrospective of the last 10/20 years of MQTT and Mosquito together. It was really lovely, because it really like brought everyone together and had these lovely memories of, you know, OggCamp past, but also talked about how Andy's using MQTT in, you know, customer installations in all kinds of wacky places. It was very interesting.
Yeah, heating animal enclosures at Marwell Zoo based on occupancy of animal enclosures, that sort of thing. Now, I was then preparing for my talk, so the next recollection I have is when I was actually talking. I don't know if you went to any in the meanwhile, but there was another like half dozen talks in the intervening hour and a half.
My next one that I went to was actually in the lightning talks that day.
Oh, right. Okay.
So there were a few lightning talks. And then I think the main thing that I went to after that was Anna Dodgson. This was while your talk was going on.
Right.
Anna Dodgson did a talk called Noobs on Oobs, which is Ubuntu for beginners, Oobs being her, you know, short name for Ubuntu. So Noobs on Oobs, Ubuntu for beginners. And it was really nice because, you know, it wasn't sponsored by us. I mean, the event was sponsored by us, but this was an individual who uses Ubuntu standing up and talking about how they discovered it, how they used it, how they misused it, how they, you know, got advice from other people on how to fix stuff. And it was really nice seeing someone outside of Canonical talking about how they use Ubuntu with a fresh pair of eyes. Because, you know, we don't often see talks at Ubuntu events that we weren't involved in.
I was unable to go to that because, as you say, I was presenting at the same time, but I saw more tweets and commentary about this presentation than any other that took place over the course of the weekend.
Yeah. Something else that's really nice is that last year I sat down at the OggCamp party with Anna and Jamie, who are also... he's also one of the scheduled speakers this year, and that was their first OggCamp, and I was just chatting to them about, you know, what they did and how they found out about it and if they were going to come again. And then the next year they're scheduled speakers, so it's really cool to see, you know, new people coming into the community and talking about what they do.
While that was going on, Martin, you did a talk, why did Canonical create Snaps?
I did. Yes, this is a presentation that usually takes an hour to deliver, and I had 25 minutes. So it was the whistle-stop version. But yeah, some of you will have seen it before at Linux Fest Northwest or UbuCon, where I also gave a variation of it. And the UbuCon version was videoed. So at some point in the future, you'll be able to enjoy that if you've never seen it.
Excellent. And you had some positive comments from that. So
yeah,
that's good.
Yeah, it was good.
Excellent. Next up, I think I went to Joe Ressington. The Internet's Joe Ressington did a talk called Podcasting Basics. And this was typical Joe demanding how you make your podcast, suggesting ways you can improve your audio.
Actually had a whole slide about think of people that listen to podcasts in bed with one earphone plugged in.
Who's he got in mind for that?
Himself, of
well,
course.
And me, I do as well. But it's a super valid point. Like, you know, you can't imagine everyone has reference speakers, and he talks about getting rid of. There's so many things he talked about. It was great to listen to, and for anyone who's never done a podcast before, there is just a ton of information in there about what microphones to buy, whether you need a mixer, what software you should use, and a fair size section on how to do the post processing and compensate, you know, for you know, badly recorded audio. But obviously he makes a point that you should record good audio in the first place. But one of the things that I hadn't considered was people with deep voices. A lot of people play podcasts in their car, and if you don't use equalizer or something to drop out those low frequencies, then cars, which are tuned for playing music, can be very boomy, and voices boom in the car. And I hadn't appreciated that's why we truncate those lower frequencies, is for that use case. But obviously, if you've got decent reference speakers, it makes it sound a bit less full sound. But that's the trade-off you make, because most people don't have, you know, reference speakers. So it was a super interesting talk, and it was a packed room, and I think everyone got some value out of it.
And then there was the panel session, which was hosted by Joe, and a friend of the show, Dr. Laura Cowan, was a panelist.
Actually, I went to another one before that, but I'll come back to that. So the panel, they had a number of questions. They crowdsourced the questions from the internet around various topics to do with, you know, open source projects and, you know, getting people involved and all that kind of stuff. And they had a fairly diverse lineup, one quite young person, and Dan, and and two women on the panel as well, and they talked a bit about education and stuff. It was good. It was nice to not have the usual topics that crop up in these panels. Nice to have a different set of questions being asked.
The younger person that you refer to there is a young gentleman called Josh, who I believe is a host on Mintcast now, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I was very impressed with how he presented himself. He's an excellent ambassador for the current generation of emerging developers and makers, extremely eloquent and thoughtful.
Yeah, he's quite articulate, and yeah, it was great having him on stage, totally.
Yes.
The one that I went to just before that was called FreeCAD. It was Julian Todd gave Getting Started and Much, Much More, it was called. Mm-hmm. And, well, it was kind of Getting Started and Much, Much Less, because he was showing what an abrasive package FreeCAD is to use. And, you know, even someone who's been using it for a fair while and is quite adept with CAD packages found it, like, quite difficult to use. But I learned a ton because I've never used it. And I was just learning terms and learning how you build things in FreeCAD. So I was just sat there like, oh, wow, this is great. This is interesting. And he was sat there going, this is rubbish. This is awful. This needs improvement. But I was like rose-tinted spectacles, glass half full kind of guy in the audience. It was great. I really enjoyed it.
And that sort of then concluded the first day. Then there was parties and celebrations, and suddenly it's Sunday morning and it all starts again. And after the initial welcome introductions on Sunday morning, Dr. Laura Cowan and Andy were talking about Parkrun and their running challenges browser extension, which we interviewed both of them about in, I think, episode 14 of season 12. Mm-hmm. So we don't need to talk about that one too much. If after this one, you can go back and listen to season 12, episode 14, and you can hear all about that.
I wasn't on that show, so I found this super fascinating.
Oh, really? Were you not?
No.
Oh, crikey, I'd forgotten that.
So I found it interesting because they talked not only about the browser extension. I mean, there was, you know, talk about the technicalities of delivering, you know, this thing as a browser extension, but also about the culture of Parkrun and the diversity of Parkrun around the world and how things differ and stuff. So
it's a really fascinating community.
Yeah, it is. And it's almost got me tempted to go to a Parkrun at the weekend, actually.
Well, you could volunteer, couldn't you?
Well, yeah, I could also, you know, get off my fat ass and go and run. But anyway, it was great. And it was really nice to see the pair of them on stage giving their presentation, because I really enjoyed that.
The next one I went to was about editing OpenStreetMap with Jossam.
Oh, yes. I went to that one as well.
Yeah, I went to a couple of OpenStreetMap talks and The Missing Maps by Stuart Ward, both of them. I really didn't have much of an appreciation about OpenStreetMaps, like the behind the scenes, you know, being I think they call them mappers. So I found all of that fascinating. And I have to say, both OpenStreetMap and OpenBenches, I am now much more aware of my surroundings and thinking, how can I be a better open data citizen as a result of those three presentations at the weekend?
Yeah, Stuart's a good advocate for OpenStreetMap. And there were a few people in the room who were advocates, and they were handing out leaflets of, you know, here are some things you might want to consider, and here are some, like, missions you could go on to actually contribute to OpenStreetMap. But the thing I found super interesting was just navigating around, much like the FreeCAD talk, just watching someone use Jossam, I found fascinating. Just watching someone noodle around in the interface and clicking on stuff, and then maybe, you know, having the wrong layer selected and someone shouting out, oh, you need to press this button. And, you know, it was that kind of talk, not one of those ones where the person sat at the front and they're getting all frustrated because they can't work the UI. It was someone proficient with the UI. OggCamp is the kind of place where it's fine for someone to shout out, no, click this, click that, and everything moves on nice and fast. not that Stuart did anything wrong, but it was just nice that it was that collaborative kind of talk that people, you know, engage in the audience. And I found it super fascinating. I learned a lot about OpenStreetMap as well, despite having looked at it, you know, number of times.
And then after lunch, there are a bunch of lightning talks, and some bloke called Alan was involved in that.
Yeah, I did a 5-minute lightning talk. I took two laptops to Old Camp, my standard T450 running Ubuntu, and I also took along my X61S that has only a command line install of Ubuntu on it.
These are both ThinkPads, right?
Yes, and of course. And the X61 is a dual core machine. You know, it's quite crusty and old, but it still works fine. And I was trying to highlight the fact that you can actually use productively a command line only system in 2019 using hardware from 10 years ago. It still works. And, you know, people with minimal facilities can still use these kind of systems. And it's also a bit of fun. I think I called it GUIs. All GUIs suck. Use the terminal, be productive. And it went down quite well. So I think I might turn that into a proper talk, because there was loads I couldn't get to. I burned through my information super fast. And I actually made slides using a command line presentation software called Presenty. It's Presentty. And you drive it with .rst file. I can't remember what they're called.
REST, restructured text.
That's it. And you just type in that and then run it and point it at it, and it renders it, and it fades in text and slides in text, and it supports, you know, ASCII. Part of it was me testing out this Presenty thing. It was good fun.
And then the last talk that I attended was one, again, with Terence Eden, which was an introduction to SVG and clever optimization tricks.
Yes, I went to that one as well.
It was brilliant.
That was fantastic. I love that talk.
Yes.
I think I did an introduction to SVG talk at Ogg Camp maybe in 2011, but I suspect that Terence did a much better job than me.
I wouldn't say that, but it was great.
it was very informative. As somebody who is just on their journey learning SVG, I found this extremely useful.
It was super to hear Terence's take on, you know, what SVG is and why you should use it and how you make them and how you can optimize your website using SVGs. And there are no valid reasons not to use SVG. And, you know, it was a somewhat opinionated talk in a good way. But it was super enjoyable and lots of interaction, lots of questions in the audience. I really, really enjoyed that.
And then to round it all out, there was the raffle cast, where everyone spent all their pocket money on raffle tickets in order to try and win an Entroware laptop, which is now sort of an Ogg Camp tradition.
Did you win anything?
No.
Well, I didn't buy any tickets, so that's why I didn't win anything.
And that was Ogg Camp. Now, if you were at Ogg Camp, what did we miss? What did you get out of Ogg Camp this year? Was it your first visit? What did you think? Have you been before? Have you not been for a long time and went for the first time? And more importantly, Dan Lynch, the organizer this year, is stepping down. This was the last Ogg Camp he's going to organize. And it's also the last Ogg Camp where Les Pounder is going to be crew chief. So we are looking for Ogg Camp organizers. Is that something that you would be interested in picking up the mantle for?
It is a lot of work, but it's manageable with a team of people.
Yeah, we can certainly point you in the right direction.
If you love the command line as much as we do, send us a command that will blow our minds, and we might even mention it on the show. Send your command line love to show@ubuntupodcast.org.
So I believe someone, not me, has a command line love this week.
So we got an email from Colin Ferriby, and Colin said, I recently bought an external hard drive to back up my old desktop hard drives to when the desktop died. I also needed to use this to back up my wife's laptop to copy files to her new desktop. So unfortunately, NTFS is what I had to use. I had a problem with a lot of my movie files having NTFS invalid characters in the names. I found Detox. You just pass the path, tack on -r for recursion, and Bob's your uncle. Everything is renamed to be compatible. Saved me a big headache.
That is brilliant. I wish I knew about that a few years ago. I wrote my own string sanitizer in Bash, of course. I really need to search for these utilities far better before I start writing my own stuff.
So this is just an apt install away.
Colin had a problem with a lot of his movie files.
You are a bad man. Thank you, Colin, for your command line love. Let's move on to the feedback.
We can never have too much feedback. Reading your feedback means that we have to come up with less content. So if you're a Redditor, you can comment on our shows through our subreddit, /r/UbuntuPodcast.
Right then, let's get on with it. This week you've been letting us know about what you'd like to see in Ubuntu 2004 LTS. So first, Rick emailed us at show@ubuntupodcast.org.
Ubuntu with GNOME is clean and elegant. I only have one big wish. Use Ubuntu software to do system updates. Doing a search for update brings up four results. Software updater shows system updates, but Ubuntu software shows that software is up to date. Software updater will also steal window focus when it likes. Oh, gosh. So, I mean, I agree with you. And actually, I mentioned this to Will when he ran the desktop team some while ago, that at some point in the future, we need to re-look at how we do system updates, because you're right, it is a bit of a mess having multiple update apps and it's not clean and crisp and consistent and beautiful. And part of the problem, I think, is Ubuntu software, the update system in there really isn't tailored for Ubuntu. It's really tailored for doing things like firmware updates, and it works really well on other distros like Fedora, where you log out and do all the updates when logged out and then log back in again to your new session. And we don't do that. And we've had Update Manager, which now is called System Updater, long before Ubuntu software or GNOME software had the capability to do that. And Ubuntu, the software updater, is way better than the GNOME software-based solution. So it's difficult, but yeah, someone needs to take a 30,000-foot holistic view of how we do updates in Ubuntu and figure that out, perhaps even for the next LTS. I wonder who that would be.
Moving on, Ryan Yoder tweeted us at Ubuntu Podcast.
When I read askubuntu.com, I swear a lot of the questions are about dual-booting a system. I feel like a tool to make dual-boot just work would be a killer feature.
Interesting. What did Wubby used to do?
That used to let you install Ubuntu on your Windows partition and run it from there, but it was really slow.
Yeah, it was a file inside your Windows partition.
Yeah. Also, I said was, and so did all of you, I recently saw that has been had a load of effort recently, and somebody's rebooted it all, and it's back working with current versions of Ubuntu.
Interesting.
Yes, I think you're right. That would be a neat feature. Julian posted on our website.
In regards to Ubuntu 2004 LTS, my personal wish list has only one item. I would like to be able to drag and drop files to and from the desktop once again. I make regular use of desktop icons for stuff I'm currently working on and have to open desktop in the file manager every time I want to quickly drop a file somewhere else. And it's become a major inconvenience and, in my opinion, a terrible user experience. Yes. I completely agree with you. I also have a desktop generally full of stuff.
I don't understand how people can work like that.
Well, I don't see it because all my windows are on top of it. I only ever see it when I minimize everything. So it doesn't matter that it's there. It's like dust underneath the carpet. It's not there. It's not there until you lift the carpet up.
But then at some point you want to find a particular piece of dust among all of the big pile of dust.
Right. And so you minimize and just look at your... It's not like those screenshots of, you know, people with 1,000 toolbars. It's not that bad. But like half a dozen things that you're currently working on, or if I just want a bit of scratch space that is immediately visible to me, reminding me that I've got to do this thing, or files that I've just dragged off of an SD card, why should I have to go and open yet another window to drag those files off an SD card? Why can't I just drag them directly onto the desktop? I completely understand the reason why it went away, and I understand why some people are so passionate that there shouldn't be any, in inverted commas, mess on the desktop. But this is my computer, not your computer. You operate your computer the way you want to, and let me operate mine the way I want to. I want to have icons on my desktop. You just go away and do whatever you want to do.
Somebody else left us their three-point wish list for Ubuntu 20.04.
One, have encrypted home directories back. I want to boot my computer without entering a key and share a computer with other persons without sharing the encryption key. Two, have guest accounts back, maybe default to off. And three, GS Connect installed by default. So GS Connect is the GNOME equivalent of KDE Connect, I think.
That's right.
I wonder if it's possible to do encrypted home directory with Lux. Oh, it would be a partition. Or ZFS. Could we do it with ZFS with a pool for each user or something? I don't know.
Quite possibly all of those things.
Yeah.
Let's just say all of those are being investigated at the moment. Well, certainly the first two are. I'm not sure about the third one.
Yeah, GS Connect, I don't know. I always find KDE Connect, I've said this before, it's an interesting piece of technology, but I will never, ever use it. And I'm pretty sure a lot of people don't use it. I have no data to back that up.
We know a lot of people do use it.
Please don't resurrect this, because all we had was feedback for weeks about the people using KDE Connect and pointing out why you and I were wrong.
Right. We also had no feedback from lots and lots of people who don't use it, because people who don't use software are not passionate enough to tell you that they don't use software. You never find someone say, by the way, I'm not an Arch user. Nobody ever says that.
I do get a lot of people, see a lot of people saying that they're not an Ubuntu user.
Yeah, but that's different. That's because they hate us. That's as worse. That's worse, in fact.
I look forward to all the KDE Connect feedback again. Mateus emailed us.
Here comes my 2004 wish list. Number one, bring back the HUD. Single top bar to save space. Move the app launcher to the top and replace it with the Ubuntu logo. Two, bring some love to Rhythmbox or make migration to an alternate easy. Three, keep making Ubuntu and GNOME Shell as stable and crash safe as possible.
So the first one, bring back the HUD, with sort of the traditional menu bar going away in GNOME applications, what is it that the HUD is going to interrogate exactly in this new world?
Well, I'm sorry, I have a wake-up call for you. Not everyone uses exclusively GNOME applications. Many people use applications such as Audacity and GIMP and others that have large, complex menu structures, and they have options buried in those menus. And so, while, yes, I agree that some applications have moved to a new design paradigm where they don't have a menu, other people are either not so enlightened or are more enlightened, depending upon your point of view.
And also, even so, I've just opened Nautilus, which has the client-side decorations. It also has a menu button there with a bunch of stuff which the HUD could access.
I'm successfully being devil's advocate, because I obviously spent 18 months re-implementing the HUD in Ubuntu Mate, so I appreciate its value.
I like the idea of exporting data out of Rhythmbox. I think the only data you want to export there is if you've carefully curated a bunch of track data, or you've got, you know, data on how many times you've listened to something, or you've made little stars next to stuff. I don't know what else you would export, because all your music is probably in a folder that could just easily be re-imported to another application.
My question on that point is, what would be the recommended alternative application? So if you've got feedback about default music player and music library management tools, I'd be interested to hear what you have to say. Larry Bushy emailed.
Regarding the wish list of features for 2004, I really like the way the new time and date settings application works. I just miss the always display the date feature. A simple panel applet to display and format the date, even separately from the time, would do the trick. I think this might have been in relation to Ubuntu Mate rather than vanilla Ubuntu.
I think it is, yeah. I'll look at that. And Chris also emailed.
In your most recent episode, you discussed features you would like to see in the next LTS. I don't remember all the features you guys discussed, but a couple of these wishes are GNOME specific. The conversation turned to GNOME's "it's not a bug, it's a feature" behavior in recent years. This user hostile behavior on GNOME's part is precisely why I've not used Ubuntu since Unity was dropped as the default desktop. Many podcasts rave about how good KDE, Plasma and Mate are, but I cannot recall any such discussion about GNOME on any podcast. What is it about GNOME that makes so many people, and I know there are a lot of them, like? Why does Ubuntu stick with GNOME when other desktop environments would give developers more control over their user experience? That is a massive topic that I think we should save for another day.
Thank you for the idea, Chris. Zach left us a comment on our website.
As a long-time Fedora user and frequent Ubuntu dabbler, I am passing along the following poorly thought-out review of 1910. Splendid, beautiful, fast. I'm used to the responsiveness of GNOME 3.34, and I'm accustomed to installing gtweak tool for a few adjustments I like. In this case, I didn't feel the need. I've yet to have a good poke around, but I'm sorely tempted to wipe my Fedora install just to give the ZFS root installer a chance on bare metal. Great job to the team and contributors.
Oh, that's nice to hear.
Yeah, well, thanks very much for your kind words, Zach. I think that the desktop team did a fantastic job, particularly around the performance optimizations of GNOME. ZFS is definitely a killer feature. And a overlooked feature is the DLNA media sharing feature that's also in 1910.
Yeah, I think we mentioned last week that Will Cook, who ran the desktop team, is leaving Canonical, or has left Canonical. I think he can go out proud of 1910.
Yeah, it was certainly a high point. And finally, Giles Knapp emailed us.
Hey, thanks for all the kind words on GPhotoSync. You've attracted noticeable traffic on the GitHub repo. Ah, excellent. That's good to hear.
Yeah, fantastic. And that rounds up the feedback. And that is the end of a bumper episode number 30 for season 12. Oh, Odd Camp was great. We didn't get to talk about our visit to the arcade club, Alan.
Oh, we didn't, did we?
Maybe that's something we can talk about next week.
Yes.
Anyway, in the meantime, if you want to find out about what the arcade club is, visit our Telegram group, ubuntupodcast.org/telegram, and we'll tell you all about it. And if you're looking for a fine VPS, go to bitfolk.com.